The world is a beautiful place. The world is a scary place. The world is full of unlimited possibilities. The world is full of dead ends. The world is a loving place. The world is a dangerous place. The world is forever changing, forever evolving. The world is crumbling. It is imploding. The world you see is the world you get. We decide which world we want to live in. I've lived in both of them. I much prefer residing in the loving. It never stops giving. It's boundless. We can wallow in our nightmares or we can embrace our dreams. Mine was my back pocket for a very, very long time. It's out now. What's your dream? For you, for us, for the planet. Let's talk about them. I'm Rick Quinn. Welcome to Back Pocket Dream.
Hello, everybody. My guest today is a woman by the name of Ginny Jablonski. If you find today's discussion interesting and enjoyable, which I think most of you will, please feel free to share this podcast with your friends and on social media. I learned of Ginny back in February from Tammy. She started listening to a podcast by Dr. Amy Robbins called Life, Death, and the Space Between. And she heard Dr. Robbins' interview with Ginny, and she said, I think you're going to really enjoy this this particular podcast. You have some similarities with your history as far as Ginny goes. So I listened to it, enjoyed it quite a bit, and I ended up having a few sessions myself with Ginny, and she helped me actually clear quite a few things. So let me tell you a little bit about who Ginny is. Ginny, as an intuitive, helps both humans and animals understand how past trauma is affecting their lives. The experiences of her own life compelled her on a journey of exploring the complexities of consciousness through the study and understanding of multiple esoteric traditions and modalities. She shares what she has learned on her journey to self-awareness with others in easy-to-understand language that is both practical and highly esoteric in nature. I can account for that myself. Her greatest passion is to promote the evolution of interspecies consciousness, allowing us to deepen our bonds with our animal friends. Hello, Ginny.
Hi, Rick. How are you today?
I am marvelous. Thank you very much. I'm very good. How's things in Arizona?
Beautiful. We're getting to the end of the monsoon season here, and it's a little cooler during the day, so we're all happy about that.
Oh, good. Okay, let me start off. Ginny, you talk in here back from animals, having a regular conversation with them, as well as speak with humans' higher selves. I'm very curious, and our listeners are too, I'm sure, how this ability did unfold for you. And the second question part of this would be, were you intuitive or clairvoyant as a child?
Okay, well, first question. The ability developed after a near-death experience in 2012, where I began to be able to hear consciousness, and it was very much like different voices coming from different places, coming from plants, coming from animals, coming from humans, but not their embodied personality voice. It was the voices of people who had influenced them in their life, or their, let's say, wounded inner child or other age aspect of them, as well as different traumatic events or experiences that were held in the nervous system, I could hear and perceive as consciousness. And so that's how that came about. I wasn't really focusing on it in the beginning. After my near-death experience, I was more worried about what had happened to me and my journey and wanting to understand why I was sick and why I had a near-death experience and came back. And that took me many, many years until I really began to focus, or the animals actually became a more active part of my awareness on a daily basis. And then the second question was, was I clairvoyant or intuitive as a child? My best answer to that is I believe I was, and I turned it off like many, many other people on the planet. But throughout my life, I was highly sensitive. I was empathic. I was clairsentient energetically. I could feel other people's physical pain as well as emotional pain, clairempathic. But I didn't know what it was. I had no context. I had no, let's say spiritual or alternative education. So everything we're talking about today is just completely new to me.
Okay. And so go back a little bit to tell us a little about the NDE, how that happened. What unfolded to have you that trigger the NDE?
Well, in the late 90s, I was working in international security, and it was a very difficult, very physically and psychologically demanding job, as well as being exposed to high threat environments, or at the very least, hearing about high threat environments on a daily basis, and working quite a bit, 14 to 16 hours a day, 7 days a week for months and months at a time without a day off. And then began to take a toll on my physical body. And when I began to notice that around 2000, I went to the doctor, and the first thing they tried to do was prescribe me, a narcotic prescription. And I said, no, I carry a gun for a living. I want to go back to work. Just please tell me what's wrong with me and let's fix me.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't really have anybody around me that was ever sick. I never knew anybody that had any chronic illness or disease. I myself had never been sick. I'd had pain and arthritis, but, nothing that ever compelled me to find out more about illness and how illness develops in us and alternative healing, mechanisms, modalities, whether it be naturopathy, homeopathy, osteopathy, chiropractic, et cetera.
Yeah.
And so after about 2 years of going to the doctor and, trying to figure out what was wrong with me and getting no relief whatsoever, I medically retired in 2001. I continued to go to the doctor, continue looking for answers until around 2007, 2008. During that time, I had been misdiagnosed by a couple of doctors with, random things such as, ankylosing spondylitis or lupus, or one doctor thought I might have MS. And they had me on a lot of non-narcotic prescription medications, including gabapentin, Cymbalta, methotrexate, Lyrica, other medications that themselves create problems and side effects, and from my perspective, definitely declined my quality of life and really truly contributed to my losing the will to live. And about 2007 or 2008, I don't remember the exact date, is when my doctor just handed me a fentanyl lollipop and said, I'm done trying to diagnose you. Nobody can figure out what's wrong with you. Opioids are your only hope. And so I went home with a fentanyl lollipop and collapsed to my knees crying with my husband, just saying, I'm never going to go back to work. And this is, 6 or 7 years after I medically retired, still hoping that they would figure out what was wrong with me and fix me. I had that much confidence in allopathic medicine, and I never knew any different. And my husband went on the internet and looked up the side effects of taking opioids, and he said something that was very illuminating, and he was basically portending what would happen in the future. He said, Ginny, if you take this medicine, your brain can forget to tell your lungs to breathe.
Wow.
And so about roughly 4 years later, that's exactly what happened in 2012. I went to sleep one night after having a very recently a dosage increase in the medication I was taking, all prescription medication, and I went to sleep. And as I was falling asleep, my brain forgot to tell my lungs to breathe. So that's what led to the NDE.
Wow. Now, at this point, you said you were pretty much bedridden, really, you were in so much pain. Were you like pretty much not that mobile?
Yes. By that time, I wasn't driving a car at all. My husband would drive me to the chiropractor once a week. He did all the grocery shopping, cooking, cleaning, ranch work, et cetera, brought me my meals in bed. I spent a lot of my waking time, crying. I was in a significant amount of pain, and I really was afraid of the medicine because of what my husband had said. And so I never really took enough medicine to completely anesthetize, which is what fentanyl is. It's really, truly a nerve anesthetic, anesthetize the pain. So I was pretty miserable. And around 2004, 2005, I started spending more time in bed during the day than not. It would be very rare that I could get up, shower, wash my hair, dry my hair, get ready. By that time, I would be exhausted and have to go back to bed. And half the time, I wouldn't even choose to leave the house to do whatever it was I wanted to do. It was really difficult. And toward the end, the last several years, I almost never got out of bed except to go to the doctor.
Oh. So tell us about the NDE. What actually happened to the NDE?
Well, it was in this sort of twilight, sort of hypnagogic state, right when you're falling asleep. And I had this sense of a presence around me, lying in my bed with my head to my headboard, which was against a wall. And I was just, my consciousness, it was just immediately propelled into a white space, no ceiling, no floor, no walls. There was a beautiful deciduous tree in front of me and a man that looked very much like Jesus. And I had been brought up Methodist, so I can imagine if I were going to pass away at that time, the being that would bring me the most comfort would have been Jesus. And so I believe that's why I perceived him. And he held out his hand and he said, you've suffered enough. Come with me. And I thought to myself, yep, I'm dead. Yeah, I've been taking a lot of drugs. I'm definitely dead. This makes sense. And then I thought the most ironic thought I could have ever had in my life was, but who's going to take care of my husband? And I just enumerated all the things he was doing for me. So that was a pretty ridiculous thought to have. And but then I heard a noise behind me, and I turned around in my consciousness. I turned around, and there were the donkeys and horses from a sanctuary that I had volunteered at for some years. And they were sort of braying and whinnying and screaming in a human voice I could hear, "Don't go, don't go. Don't you remember? There's something important you have to do."
Wow.
And when they said that, something just clicked inside of me, and I turned back around where I had my hand in Jesus's hand, and I was just about ready to go with them. And I pulled my hand back and I said, "Sorry, Jesus, I'm going with them." And then I was instantly back in my body and instantly regretted the decision. It was very painful being in my body. My lungs had stopped. They were just on fire. I had stopped breathing. It felt as if I had had a heart attack. And it just felt like, 300 pounds just sitting on my chest. It was really painful. And I screamed easily 20 or 30 times out loud to my husband, "I just died, I just died, I just died, I just died, I just died." I was just screaming it over and over and over.
Right.
And so that was that experience.
Well, it must have been such a sense of relief not being in that state. And Jesus and just feeling beautiful. So it was a courageous decision to come back. But thankfully, the donkeys knew you had a different mission that you came to do. I guess they reminded him. I'm sure Jesus didn't take it personal.
I'm sure he doesn't take anything personally. It wasn't my conscious embodied self that made the choice. It was a part of me that I was not aware of, a part of me that knew maybe more of the greater plan beyond the veil. And I can't really speak to that, because when I came back, that part of me, I don't remember. But I do remember what I saw and what I heard while I was there. But I don't remember much more than that.
Yeah. Wow. It seems like, you hear different NDEs they listen to, and everybody's is so similar but so different too. They always kind of speak to what that person best needs, right? When you said, I saw Jesus, someone else could see Buddha or whatever, right? So it's what that person kind of expects, right? It's kind of well-suited, I guess, to the NDE.
Oh, yes. Thousands of people have shared their NDEs publicly and, through podcasts such as this, or video testimony, or at conferences. And there do seem to be, based on PMH Atwater's research of NDEs, there do seem to be four main categories of NDEs, but there are so many variations within each of the categories. But I would say more often than not, a person who has had an NDE would, for the most part, say that the experience they had was exactly what they needed. Yes.
So when you say four main categories, can you talk about those? I'm kind of curious what that is, the four main categories.
I actually cannot enumerate them as well as PMH Atwater does, but basically there are negative near-death experiences and positive near-death experiences. There are near-death experiences where people travel through a tunnel of light and meet beings, whether it be ancestors or guides or helpers, or even some people say God or Jesus, and then taken through a process of having a life review. There are other people who are just given, tours of the cosmos and given remarkable information. Some people are shown interpersonal relationship information. It's very, very fascinating, the wide variety of testimony from near-death experiencers.
It is. Can you talk about emotional trauma held in the body? That is.
Sure. Well, Dr. Gabor Mate is well known for saying, trauma is what happens to us. Pardon me, I misspoke. Trauma is what happens inside of us. It is not what happens to us. It is not the event. Yes, the event was traumatizing, but what is the effect of that traumatizing event? It happens inside of us. It happens in our body. It happens in our nervous system. And my 10-year journey so far, which has taken me around the world and to study many, many, many different philosophies and healing modalities and just perspectives about trauma and healing and metaphysics, has validated for me that my purpose in coming back is to understand what happens inside of us, how that trauma affects us and the nervous system. And so my ability to hear literally the personification of consciousness, I can hear the voices of the people that have said or done unkind things to us, or where we have said or done unkind things to ourselves that are trapped within the body. And so in indigenous societies and other cultures that are based in a spiritual awareness of who we are as spirit. These cultures, these cultures have practices, whether it be meditative, Qigong, Tai Chi, Shintoism, Buddhism, Vedic, Hinduism, et cetera, different versions of, and many different indigenous practices all have inherent within their belief structure practices to manage one's own energy, to become more self-aware, to move energy, life force energy, prana, chi, ki, whatever you prefer to call it, through the body and not allow it to become, let's say, crystallized or stuck. And these practices aren't widely talked about in Western industrialized nations. And this is, from my estimation and in all of my experience, and many, many, many millions and millions of people would agree, that this is what is largely missing and why we continue to carry these unprocessed memories or traumatic events or, as you said, trapped emotions in the body, creating illness, creating imbalance, creating disease, because we're not taught how to manage our own energy system, our own energetic construct. And it really doesn't matter to me how a person believes, you know, what their religion is or what their spiritual philosophy is or what their metaphysical, non-physical, esoteric view of the luminous architecture of our non-physical energetic body is. Anybody can believe or use any language, any lexicon they want. Consciousness is consciousness is consciousness, and it exists within us, and everything is consciousness. You know, our nervous system has a consciousness. Every cell of our body has consciousness, etc. And so when we are unable to process our memories, and those memories have emotions, judgments, or fears connected to them, they begin to sort of languish in the body or travel around the body through, let's say, as a Taoist would say, a meridian in the body. Or the nadi, the minor energetic connections between the chakras in pranic medicine. And it is when those emotions aren't released, the memories aren't processed, that we begin to have problems. And this is what, you know, yoga masters such as Paramahansa Yogananda in science and spirituality we're trying to teach people. This is what so many other cultures are trying to impress upon us as human beings, that we are much more than meets the eye and much more than Newtonian physics or modern mainstream accepted medicine will allow us. And there's a lot more to be known from an esoteric perspective about who we are and how we work.
So how do we, you know, you spoke of the indigenous people, that they, from the get-go, they're taught, they're young, how to release that more so than we are. How do we release it? What would be helpful for us to know? To release these stuck traumas that we all have from our youth and from our lives?
Well, that's a really interesting question. If you look at it purely from an indigenous perspective, there are, that I'm aware of, hundreds of indigenous perspectives. I mean, I'm aware of one tribe that worships 99 gods and some tribes, you know, that worship the sun and the moon and the earth and the sky. So to specifically answer your question from an indigenous perspective, what they do, or at least the medicine men, the wisdom carriers, the shaman, they can work through dream time, lucid dreaming, or they can work through an esoteric understanding of psychic abilities to journey or communicate with the soul, the non-local, pure part of us that is not wounded, and they work with nature spirits, et cetera. It's not my preferred method of helping someone become more self-aware and self-responsible, because those types of practices and belief constructs set someone apart from yourself. There is a master, there is a guru, there is someone who can heal you because you are unable to heal yourself. What I have come to understand is that we each are able to heal ourselves through self-awareness practices and self-inquiry, managing our thoughts, mindfulness and meditation, and becoming more aware of our own energy and listening to our body. You know, one of the very little known facts out there is the pain body that Eckhart Tolle talks about came about not because it was ever supposed to be a part of our energetic construct, but because we as humans have separated ourselves from our spirit. We have denied ourselves as spiritual beings, infinite beings of light. And when we are in alignment with our spirit, with our soul, our, you know, Atman, our uncorruptible self, as other indigenous people would say, we listen to let's call it the divine, the spirit, the messages that come through us, through our nervous system. And that's how our spirit, some people call it the soul, some people call it the spirit, enters the nervous system and informs the divine intelligence of the body. And when we listen to the body and when we're in tune with the body, we know what is needed. When we separate ourselves from the spirit, we're no longer in touch with that divine wisdom, divine intelligence of the body. And so we developed this consciousness that people refer to as the pain body. And it's basically an energetic collection mechanism for all of our pain, because in our ignorance and in our forgetfulness, we haven't known what to do with it. And mm-hmm. So therefore, we're just sort of squirreling it away and saving it up. And this is why we have so many people on psychiatric medication that just isn't working. It's numbing us. It's further separating us from our spirit, but it's not getting to the root cause. It's not addressing the underlying issue as to why certain things are happening with us. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, definitely. But I just see that's a big problem that we have. But I think we're getting better and better that we, over the years, we're raised just to stuff it down, deny it, not talk about it, and like it'll go away, but it won't, because you're not dealing with it, releasing with it, and being vulnerable and honest about it. And now I think we're starting to get more honest about it, and that helps us release it instead of just pretend it didn't happen or just put it away in the attic. Well, your stuff in the attic is just more and more stuff that you're just stuffing in your body. And we're all going to encounter these things, but how we deal with them is the important thing, whether they get stuck or released or not. It's just really fascinating. But it just seems like we're on the edge of so many things that we're changing all for the better, learning through you and people like that, and more and more other people and ourselves. We start tuning into ourselves. I've heard you speak before that, like in different lives, you were often a healer, but you didn't empower them. And in this life, you're concentrating on empowering others. Can you speak of that a little further?
Yes. Thank you for bringing that up. This is one of my passions to talk about. And I just alluded to it in talking about the hierarchical spiritual society of certain indigenous cultures, where there's one or two people within the tribe that are responsible for everybody's emotional and physical well-being. Mm-hmm. And that is very disempowering. That is, it gives a message that you are unable of managing, you know, your own physical health, your own emotional health, and your own spiritual connection to the spirit, soul, divine, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And so on my journey, what I was shown over and over and over again by my soul was I was taken on a guided tour of how many lifetimes I was this. I was a sage. I was a wisdom carrier. I was a guru. I was a master. I was a healer. I was an herbalist. I was a prognosticator. I was a shaman. And how in various ways, in almost all of these experiences, my role was disempowering other people. And it was sort of setting me apart from others, giving the message that I could do something or I had access to some energy in the universe that others did not have access to. And my soul made darn sure that I did not go down that rabbit hole in this life. Absolutely.
Yep. Well, that's, I mean, we grow up with, like, you know, whether it be priests or doctors or things like that, we give so much of our power away, and our parents kind of put into that, you know, whatever the priest says or the teacher says or whatever the doctor says. And so often we're just trained to look outside of ourselves when we first just have to check with ourselves. And now it seems like we're doing that more.
Yeah. And, you know, Rick, as you know, growth is hard.
Yeah, it sure is.
It is a time of great transition on the planet. And there are some people who will just never separate themselves from science. They are so intellectual. They are so left-brained that there's just no room for another perspective. Mm. Now, thank goodness, and I used to be that way. I mean, I majored in economics, you know, and I carried a gun for a living. So I had never bought a self-help book or been to a spiritual bookstore in my life. So, you know, I didn't have a choice. I was literally propelled into a reality that I was either going to accept or totally deny and possibly become, you know, crazy or be potentially diagnosed as schizophrenic.
Yeah.
You know, not that I was expressing multiple voices or thought I was different people, but this is what happens to people who perceive multidimensionally, who perceive even a fraction of a percent of the other 99% of our reality that most people cannot see. And when you can, you're labeled as, you know, woo-woo or crazy or, you know, something like that. And again, you know, this is a very difficult transition to go through. And because there are so many religious perspectives, because there are so many spiritual perspectives, because there are so many individual experiences which create more and more division and separation, this is not an easy transition to navigate because there are so few people who resonate with one another's experience, psychic ability, belief system. And so it's really creating, even within the metaphysical community, more and more fracturing than is absolutely necessary. And a large part of the metaphysical community would have you say, just have faith, everything is perfect, don't worry about anything, just live your life, everything's being taken care of for you. And that could not be further from my experience. And what my soul has shown me is that we become more aware of ourselves and more self-responsible is when we embody more of our soul and begin to express more of the divine through us. It's not, my soul has caution me not to just journey out of the body, hang out in some chakra above the head, become blissed out, and totally deny the reality that most everybody else is living within. That, from my soul's perspective and in my experience, is not helpful. Is not helpful.
Well, like you and myself too, some of the things that we thought, you know, look from the outside, look so awful. Like your fentanyl and your overdose, my depression, or different things. Without those things happening to us, we wouldn't have been able to shift. So those things actually happen for our benefit to shift us to where we need to be shifted to. You know, this life isn't necessarily a boat ride. You just fly along and easy, nice sailing.
It's right.
How you respond to these events in your life and say, wait a minute, what is this telling me? What is this awakening me to? And to be thankful for that. Okay, thank God. It was all going through it or whatever, but I thank God, and I thank God that my higher soul or whatever, the universe transpired to make these events happen so that I was able to shift my awareness. Instead of saying, oh me, oh poor me, this happened to me, and why did it happen to me? I mean, all these things happen to all of us. None of us come on, you know. We have to look at them as a blessing, right?
Oh, I agree, and I would even take that one step further. That when I have something happen to me, an aberrant emotion, or I'm triggered by something outside of me, I immediately look within myself to find out why that happened. I struggled in the beginning of my journey because I got involved in different groups of, you know, different people with different beliefs. And there were a lot of people. So there were some common themes, like I'm right and everybody else is wrong. That's one common theme. Another common theme was, oh, this person is bad. You can't go around them. They have negative energy and they're, you know. And another common theme was, and I witnessed just an absolute misuse of psychic abilities, wanting to know things about people that we have no business knowing, you know, beyond what's available in the field. Because, you know, please know, make no mistake, there's a lot of information available in the field, but to purposely be desiring to know or understand or to have insight into someone else's journey without their conscious awareness, that's a little sketchy, you know.
Right.
And there were a lot of people, a lot of blaming, shaming, outside blaming, shaming. This person is wrong. This person is doing it wrong. And where I would see these things, I would immediately say to my own consciousness, okay, I am very curious about this. Why is this happening? Help me understand my experience. And when we look at life's challenges like that, you know, why did I break my foot? Why did I fall down? Why did I lose my job? Why did I have a car accident? What's the message for me? What am I resisting? Who haven't I forgiven? What is there potentially a past life, a pattern from a past life that needs to be addressed? I mean, these are all valid, very valid questions that if we ask them, our life will get easier and easier and easier. But as long as we stay in victim mode and blaming and shaming everything on the outside world, we're not listening to the message that, as you just said, the universe conspired to lay at our feet, right? And I think that, to me, that's exciting. I find all of this, I have a very healthy curiosity for it, and I find it very interesting. And my suggestion to everybody when they have a quote-unquote problem with somebody else is to just look inside, do your own healing, focus on yourself, and all of these issues outside of us will resolve. But when we keep going for the new shiny, you know, manifesting tool or somebody that claims if you pay them $5,000, they're going to activate your DNA or they're going to upgrade you, download you, you know, that is absolutely not a representation of, it's not a good example of going within and allowing us, one, an individual, to understand why our soul, our spirit, chose to come here in this life and have these experiences. And once we do that, then things can begin to unfold and shift and change. At least that's my experience.
Yeah. I think I'm trying to remember where I heard it from. I think I was listening to Neil Donald Walsh lately. I think it was the book Communion with God. But he was talking about duality and all that in darkness and light. Without the darkness, we wouldn't see the light. The light, you know, that we need the I don't know if I'm wording it right, but the darkness helps direct us to the light. You know?
Right. And the light within. And of course, right. You know, there are wonderful, beautiful spiritual philosophies where there is a wonderful, you know, in some perspectives, hierarchy of light around and guides and support mechanisms for that. And that's all beautiful. But if we operate within that, without the relationship with self, without the self-awareness, you know, rarely do we get to really create material shifts that completely change our lives. Now, some people do, you know, some people just wake up one day and say, I'm just going to be happy, you know, and they are, and that's beautiful. But there are those who choose to try to just live in the now or become more neutral, and then they deny the human emotional experience. And that's not really healing or evolution. That's more sort of denial and hanging around outside your body. Now, I'm not judging that. I mean, it's not right for me. It works for some people, and that's fine. But for people who truly want to see a difference within their own heart, be able to sleep better at night, not be woken up by embarrassing or shameful thoughts or memories, and to have a more pleasant, you know, interpersonal relationship with our significant other or our family members, etc., then that, for the most part, takes a little bit of internal excavation.
Yeah, right. I could keep talking about this type of thing forever, but I want to shift a little bit to animal consciousness, what, you know, one of your primary goals in this life and passions. What is one of the biggest misconceptions that we have about domesticated animals and our pets?
Well, to answer that question, I can only basically express my experience, which has resulted in an opinion, which I have formed as of today, which may well change tomorrow. But yep. I can share with you, you know, where I am today with it. And it's frankly a lot different than most of the people I've met in the animal communication community. And because of this, Rick, and I don't know if I shared this with you, I'm starting a podcast called Interspecies Evolution. And I have the first 6 months of podcasts in the can already ready to go and discuss exactly this question.
Oh, great. So
from my perspective, the biggest misconception I think that I see talked about in the animal realm is that animals don't make judgments, animals don't have feelings, animals can't lie, and the animals, you know, don't get traumatized. I mean, actually, I have a long list of misconceptions, but that's just a start.
And you've mainly connected with horses, right? It's why horses?
Well, no, I mean, I'm a horse person myself, and I've worked with a lot of horses in person, you know, maybe 4 or 5 or more hundred horses in person, physically working with horses with behavior problems, trauma, that type of thing. But I work with, you know, thousands of animals and all species, from fish to birds to reptiles, you know, and dogs and cats as well. But I mean, my husband and I live on a ranch, and we have 4 horses, 4 donkeys, and 3 dogs. So horses are near and dear to my heart, and I'm well known for working with horses, but I don't only work with horses.
Gotcha. What's one of the funniest experiences you've ever had communicating with animals?
Well, a woman from Texas who's a NFR champion, cutting horse champion, lovely, lovely woman who probably was going against her entire community, you know, calling an animal communicator. She said to me one day, I have two horses. Could we do both horses in one session? Now, my normal policy is that I will only work with one animal at a time, and I don't do short sessions. I only do hour-long sessions because truly, from my perspective, we cannot honor the soul of an animal in 15, 20, 30 minutes. You just can't get to the truth. And how can we be certain that they even trust us enough to tell us the truth in that short of a time?
Mm-hmm.
And but I thought to myself, well, this is a lady from Texas, and, you know, it might serve me well to have someone who's had a good experience with animal communication in Texas. So why don't I just go ahead and ask the animals if they give permission to have a shorter session? So I thought, let's defer to the animals and see what they think. So she had two horses, a mare and a gelding, and the mare said, oh, sure, I only need a half hour. No problem. Sure, I can do a half hour. And then I asked the gelding, and the gelding said, no, I need the whole hour. You can't just work with me for a half an hour. So, you know, we said, okay, that's fine. So we made two different appointments for her two horses.
Yeah.
And it came the day to talk to the gelding, and I started to connect with him. And the way I work is I always let the animal talk first so that the animal can tell their story from their perspective, because it is 9 times out of 10 not what the human thinks it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to connect with him, and he was looking at me out of his left eye, and I could see the white of his eye, and he has real sort of suspicious look on my face. And I said, for some reason, I don't think he likes me or he trusts me, or there's something going on with this. And he goes, that's right, lady. That's why I said I'm going to need an hour, because it's going to take you a half an hour to convince me that this animal communication stuff is real.
Really, really?
I just started laughing out loud hysterically, and I literally dropped the phone. And I thought, whoa, okay, compose yourself. This, once again, here's a conservative woman from Texas, you know. Maybe this is not good to be so silly on the phone. So, I grabbed the phone and I said, can you tell me why you don't believe in animal communication? And he said, no human I've ever met before believed in it. Not the barn manager, not the trainers. They all said it's a bunch of hooey. And I'm like, so I said to him, but you're talking to me right now, and I can see you, and I know that you're suspicious, and I can hear what you just said, and I heard that you wanted an hour, not a half an hour. So am I really talking to you? And he goes, yes, but I don't know how.
It was a skeptical horse, huh?
It was very skeptical. It was just incredible. And I just love skeptical humans, too, and I've met so many, and I've written a few blogs about that. But that was probably the funniest, but, you know, shouldn't laugh because it's very serious as well.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That just really demonstrated to me that animals have no reason to doubt the veracity of our opinions. And if they're around somebody who thinks black is black and white is white, and that's what it is, you know?
You say you can, you know, you can hear plans too, and that's tough for me to wrap my head around. You can hear plans, or that you can hear that consciousness. Like it really is hard for me to understand.
Oh my gosh, I have a funny story about a plant. Well, I don't know, it's funny.
Yeah.
So I have a girlfriend. I've been to her house, I don't know, easily 20 times in a year, you know, and she had this beautiful plant that was just growing all over the place, very tall, you know, sort of outgrowing its pot. And I knew for years that it was outgrowing its pot.
Yeah.
And I was at her house one day, and the plant says to me, you need to ask her to separate me into two pots. I need more space to grow for my roots. And then you're going to take home one of the pots. And I was like, Well, I'm not going to say that part. I'm not going to say you need to separate your plant and give me the beautiful plant, because that's kind of a suspicious thing to say, hey, your plant just told me that you need to give me the plant. So I didn't say that part. I just said, okay, by the way, your plant asked to be divided into two. And so, oh no, you know, 3-4 weeks later, I go to her house again, and I notice these beautiful pots sitting there. And I said, oh, look, you divided the plants. And she goes, yeah, and that one's for you.
Wow.
She had bought this beautiful new planter. And I said, what? You're kidding. Yeah. And then the plant said, see, I told you.
So somehow she got the message from the plant to give it. You think she got the message, right?
Oh, I'm sure. She's quite intuitive, although I don't know that she recognized that she was able to talk to plants, because she really questions her ability even to talk with animals, and that's one of the things I've been working with her on for a while now.
Well, one way I could go on with I didn't get to all the questions I want to, but I don't want to go too long for you. We're gonna end with a speed round, and I'm stealing that idea from Dr. Amy Robbins, who stole that from somebody else. So I feel like I have the right to steal it from her, and it's kind of a fun round. But before we get to that, we kind of touched on it earlier a little bit about how consciousness is changing right now, how the world is unfolding, and how dramatically, how fast it's changing. Can you comment on that? What's going on right now in on our planet? The way you personally see it.
I would just call it a great awakening.
Uh-huh.
So many people are not necessarily communicating with one another about their experiences, but I talk to people all day, every day, who say, I've always had these visions, I've always known these things, I've always had these abilities, but I've never had anybody to talk about it. And so I think it's becoming more acceptable to have these conversations. I think that more and more people are searching for real lasting solutions and having not as much faith, let's say, in our established systems. Yeah. And, you know, looking outside, whether it be just alternative, natural remedies, plant medicine, or acupuncture, or energetic healing, these discussions are becoming something that a lot of us are craving, that we are just on the soul level, we are just craving to talk about these things. And so I guess I would call it the Great Awakening. Other people have different words for it. We're at a time of tremendous evolution and expansion and transition on the planet. And, you know, that could be a 4 or 5 hour conversation, of course.
Right. Well, it's just a safer place now, too. I mean, generations ago, you'd be killed for saying certain things. Now it's safer. It's safer to speak up and not be afraid of what's people are going to do to you or think of you. It's a much, right? Even though it doesn't seem so safe sometimes out here, it is. Before I get to the speed round, is there any kind of particular question you wish I asked that I didn't ask?
No, I really enjoyed working with you. No, I think it's been a lovely conversation.
Okay, well, great. Well, maybe we can do a part two. And here we go with the speed round. You ready?
Yep.
Okay. Spirituality means...
our awareness of ourselves, the part of ourselves, the part of our consciousness that exists beyond linear thought.
Beautiful. What is something most people don't know about you?
Oh, goodness. Well, I've talked so much about myself, I don't know.
Bobby or a... another different passion, or
I'm a quilter. I love to sit in my sewing room and make quilts in my free time.
Okay, all right. I didn't know that. What is one thing you are really looking forward to?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I look forward to everything. I look forward to just being able to get out of bed every day and to play with my puppies and to talk to my horses. And
well, I think your delay just said to me that you're open to everything. So
I can single out one thing. Yeah.
You're like, you're flabbergasted, like the whole, everything. What is one thing you are really grateful for right now? The first thing that pops into your head.
Oh, my new puppy.
Your new puppies. New puppies, isn't it? Three?
No. Yes, I have three, yes. But the one who came to me in a dream and told me he was my new puppy, that this one in particular I have a wonderful, incredible bond with.
Before you got him, he came to you in a dream?
Before I got him, he came to me in a dream, and I said, who are you? And he said, I'm your new puppy. I'm here. I'm your new puppy.
Did he tell you what to name him?
He did. After we brought him home, he did. And I said, well, how am I going to find you? How do I know where you are? And he said, don't worry, I'll find you. And that afternoon, a woman I hadn't communicated with in 4 years sent me a text saying she had seven puppies available.
Oh my gosh. And you got two more with the same litter?
It's a long story. My husband fell in love with one and I fell in love with another one. And we looked at each other at the same time and said, well, do you think we're going home with two? And he was talking about a different one than I was talking about. So we ended up with three.
Oh my goodness. What book is on your nightstand right now?
The Horse Cure, C-U-R-E, by Michelle Halling Brooks.
Uh-huh. Okay. What is your favorite spiritual practice?
Meditating in the morning to set my space for the day and set my intention for the day and sort of managing my own energetic space.
I like that word space. I never really understood much about it, but I kind of get it more and more now, space. I love that word space. I think I know the answer to this, but what was the most transformative experience in your life?
My second near-death experience in 2012.
Okay. And, yeah, we never did talk about the first one, but we can maybe do that another time. Right. How would you describe God?
The source of all love and compassion.
Beautiful. And lastly, how do people find you?
Well, my website is heartofthehorse.us.
Beautiful. And looking for your podcast too. People can start looking for you. When's that come out? That October? Is that?
Yeah. It launches the second week in October, and it's interspeciesevolution.com.
And you've already got six podcasts in the can. You said, is that what you said?
I've already got 6 months of podcasts in the can.
Are you doing one weekly? How often do you do them?
Once a week, although there are a few people who are coming back two and three and four times, and I may want to release them sort of back-to-back so that when people get excited about a certain person. But the purpose to talk about, so from a biological perspective, interspecies evolution is when a species evolves. And, you know, I think scientists would say there's not much of that going on the planet right now. But from an animal communication perspective, people talk about animal communication as interspecies communication between species. So my perspective in calling my podcast Interspecies Evolution is because I believe that our species, our human species, is evolving now. And I also believe that animals, especially dogs, horses, cats, domesticated animals, are evolving as well. Additionally, it is to address the communication between species and the way we look at the way we honor or dishonor inherently the soul and the consciousness of animals as well.
I look forward to listening to it. I mean, if we are, in fact, all one. We're all one. So it's a fascinating podcast. I really look forward to hearing it. I really do. I'm sure it's going to be marvelous. And thank you for producing it. And thanks for being with us today, Jenny. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Rick. It was fun.
And thanks to you for listening to us today on Back Pocket Dreams. My hope is if your dreams are lingering in your back pocket, you're perhaps a little bit closer to taking them out and being the wonderful you is. Yes, I is, you is. Drawing near to being totally we are. Stay well, stay kind, and relax your busy mind. Bye for now.